what would he say to Jews living in Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, at this particular unique moment in Jewish history? What I'm going to talk about is Avraham Avinu. But before I get to Avraham Avinu's message, I have to tell you a number of things about him that will have a great deal of bearing on the message. It may very well be that our understanding of Avraham Avinu itself is already going to be a message to us and to all of us at this particular moment. Parashat Lech Lecha. Parashat Lech Lecha begins, and God spoke unto Avraham, saying, Lech Lecha me'yartzecha me'noladetcha me'beit avicha el ha'oretz asher erecha. Go from your land, your birthplace, your father's house, to the land that I will show you. Why does God communicate to Avraham Avinu? Why? At the beginning of Parashat Noach, it says, Ela toldot Noach. These are the generations of Noach. Noach ish tzadik, tamim haya bedohatav. Noach was a righteous man. He was full in his devotion to God in his generation. So we are told in advance, this is a unique and unusual human being. And it's for that reason that we can understand that God appears to him and speaks to him and communicates with him and ultimately saves him and his family from the flood. But we seem to be left completely in the dark with regard to Avraham Avinu. All that we hear is God's communication to him, Lech Lecha. Why aren't we told that Avraham was a man of great devotion? Avraham had made great discoveries. He achieved the knowledge of God. Why aren't we told all of these things about Avraham? So we'll know why God appears to him. That's going to be the first part of this year. There's going to be a second question that we will deal with, but we're going to deal with the second question after we have in some way answered the first. The second question is going to deal with the beginning of Parashat Vayera. But let's leave things, we'll go step by step. Why aren't we told who Avraham was? Why aren't we told something that would leave us with the impression why it is that God appears to him? So for all intents and purposes, our knowledge of Avraham, as far as the Torah is concerned, begins with the divine imperative to him, God's command, Lech Lecha, me'artzecha, u'me'uladetcha, me'beit avicha. But the fact is that we know a great deal about Avraham Avinu. We know a great deal from his birth on and forward, that 70 or 75 years of his life that we know about from the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral law, which finds nearly no expression whatsoever in Torah itself, and Torah seems to be concealing those 70 to 75 years. The Rambam, in the magnificent first chapter of the Laws of Idolatry, the Rambam gives us the background, the history of Avraham Avinu. He describes for us a world and how it slid down the slippery slope of sin, of idolatry. Be made Enosh in the days of Enosh. People made a terrible mistake. They thought that by worshipping God's great creations in the world, this is another form of showing our devotion to him, the sun, the stars. And the Rambam describes how with the passage of time, a few generations down the line, people forgot that there was a God, a creator, and they thought it's the sun and the stars and the heavenly bodies that are to be worshipped. And so the world continued until Kach al derech zeho yaha'olam holechu midgalgel. This is the way the world kept going. Ad shenolad amudo shel olam, until the pillar of the world was born. Vehu Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu is the pillar of the world. And the Rambam says, kibon shenigmal eitan zeh, when this mighty one grew up, he began to have questions. He was a child. Even as a child, Avraham Avinu already began to question the axioms of life in his day. And he began to think day and night, and he wondered, how is it possible for such a magnificent world to have come into being? How? Did it happen all by itself? Avraham Avinu must have gone through 40, 50 painful years of questioning the beliefs of his own family, his whole society, his city, for that matter, a whole world. And slowly but surely, the idea began to gel in his mind that there's a creator, there's a higher being that brought all of this onto the face of this earth, all of it, the whole universe. He must have had many, many sleepless nights. There are times he must have woken up in a cold sweat. At moments when he was just about to make the discovery, he might have said to himself, is the whole world crazy and I'm the only normal one? Is it possible so many bright, intelligent people in the world and they've all made a terrible mistake in me? I'm the one who knows the truth. Avraham Avinu also was troubled by the fact that if this truth that is beginning to seep through his mind is so, it is absolutely revolutionary. It's something that a world will not be able to accept. He's going to make a world full of enemies. No one likes change. Nobody likes radical change. Certainly not people who are in power. And Avraham Avinu still has his doubts. He's not perfectly certain. This is most probably one of the most painful processes a person can go through. Until the Rambam says, as he describes Avraham, describes that he was born into a family of idolaters, and his father and his mother and all of the people serve idolatry, and he serves idols with them. But as he's worshipping idols, he's having serious emuna problems. He doesn't seem able to really believe in all of this. Until he achieved the absolute truth. And you know how he achieved it? The Rambam says, "Bitvunato hanechona," because of a great mind. He just had it right. And he was able, therefore, to arrive at a conclusion that was so radically different than anything that had been heard for centuries on the face of this earth. That's gonna look very good on the film. You'll leave that on the cutting floor. This you can leave on. Yeah. And he achieved the truth. And he knew that there is a God. And he knew that this God is the one who made everything and created everything, and everything exists and continues to exist only by virtue of that God. V'yoda shekol ha'olam tovim, and he knew the whole world was making a mistake. And not only that, he was able to arrive at the reasons. How did they come to make this terrible mistake? Uben arboim shana hikir Avraham et bodo. Avraham was 40 years old when he finally recognized his creator. We're talking about an achievement of such genius, of such magnitude. I'm always fond of quoting. I'm always fond of quoting the epilogue in Paul Johnson's book, The History of the Jews. He says that the purpose of his writing the book was he wanted to know where did this Abraham come from? The man who's had such unbelievably profound impact on a whole world. And at the epilogue, the end of the book, he says, it is Antiquities of the Jews. Josephus describes Abraham as a man of great sagacity, who had higher notions of virtue than others of his time. He therefore determined to change completely the views which all then had about God. One way of summing up 4,000 years of Jewish history is to ask ourselves, what would have happened to the human race if Abraham had not been a man of such great genius? What would have happened to all of humanity if he had stayed in Ur and kept his higher notions to himself? And no specific Jewish people would have come into being. Certainly, by the way, this is a guy that's writing this, and we love to hear nice things about us from a guy. Certainly, the world without the Jews would have been a radically different place. Well, those today who would say we'd have less problems in the world, all right? Humanity might eventually have stumbled upon all the Jewish insights, but we cannot be sure. All the great conceptual discoveries of the intellect seem obvious and inescapable once they have been revealed, but it requires a special genius to formulate them for the first time. And that genius was Avraham Avinu. And at age 40, he made a second great decision. The decision he made at age 40 was he was going to share this information, this great discovery, with the rest of the world, regardless of what price he may have to pay. And he knew that it wasn't going to be easy going for him. The fact is, he began to share it. And in sharing it, there was a fear. He was certain there are those who would mock him, those who would deride him, those who would despise him, those who would ridicule. But then again, he may inject a sense of doubt into people. And there may even be those who are going to rally around him. And all of them happened. He was rejected. He was abused. His life was in grave danger, but he was so absolutely certain of his great discovery that he went on to become the one who brought a great message to all of mankind. Unbelievable, indescribable accomplishment. This is an amazing story. This is a story that should be known. The Rambam tells us the story. Even Paul Johnson spends about 500 pages telling us the story. Why doesn't Torah tell us this story? Why doesn't Torah tell us the story of the courage, the determination, the strength, the brilliance, the genius, the sagacity of Avraham Avinu? Why aren't we told that story? Why is it sort of hidden within the lines of a medrash here and a medrash there, a gemara here, a gemara there, but it doesn't appear in Torah? A number of the Mepharshim deal with this question. The Ramban, for example, says that in order to tell us the story of Avraham Avinu's genius, it would have been necessary to tell us of the tragic mistakes that had been made by mankind. And Torah doesn't want to tell us about all of that. Torah is not going to spend who knows how many psukim to describe the descent into idolatry. The Ramban just says, just as Torah never told us anything about the generation of Enosh, the generation in which it all began. That's the approach of the Ramban. HaTorah lo tirtze laharich b'deot ovdei avodah zarah. Torah does not want to tell us the opinions of idolaters and to explain it in detail, all that took place between him and the Chaldeans. So therefore, nothing is said until Lech Lecha. The Rabbeinu Bechaya says that, well, at the end of Parshat Noach, it says that Avram left Ur Kasdim. So he says the two words Ur Kasdim are already hinting to us. Ur Kasdim seems to be describing some kind of a furnace. And this already is an indication that there's a great deal to the story of Avram, even before God appears to him and says, Lech Lecha. The Maharal says, the reason why we're not told all of the story of Avraham Avinu is because we would have then been left with a mistaken impression that God chooses Avraham Avinu and his children after him because of Avraham's great struggle. Torah wants to make it clear that the choice of Avram and the Jewish people for all generations is absolutely unconditional. If it would be the culmination of this great story, then we might think, well, it depends. If the children are going to be like the Tata, and the Einiklus are going to be like the Tata, so then God will relate to them. The choice seems to be described in Torah as something simply that comes in one single instant of time from heaven, nothing really that preceded it, says the Maharal, in order to make it quite clear that from the moment that God spoke to Avram and he said, Lech lecha me'aretzecha me'moladetcha me'beit avicha, from that moment on, Avram and his seed are chosen for all time, and that God's relationship with them is an eternal one, never to be broken, never to be torn asunder. What occurred to me is that there may be another reason why Torah doesn't tell us the story of Avraham Avinu's greatness. Because we then might be left with a terribly mistaken impression that what Torah wants us to do is retrace the intellectual steps that were taken by Avraham Avinu. We might be left with the impression that what Torah wants of us is that we too should struggle. We too should ask questions. We too, by dint of our own great efforts, arrive at the same conclusion as Avraham Avinu. And if that would be true, two problems. Most of us would never make it. We'd never make it. And it would also mean that all of Avraham Avinu's struggle was absolutely for naught. God does not want us to become the great intellects, the great intellectuals that Avraham Avinu was. Enough that there was one Jew who had to go through such an extremely difficult period of mental anguish, intellectual suffering. And then finally it comes that there's a whole world that is up in arms against him. There are those who will join him, but most of the world is opposed to him. They may call him the Sielu Kimatabatokheni, you are a prince of God. But they're not too happy with Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu is the one who has shattered the idols of the world. I always want to say, you know, in kindergarten we all learned the story. We all learned the story that Avraham's parents had an idol store. They sold idols. And one day they had to go out, so they left little Avram idle sitting, and
Sitting idly by.
Sitting, all right, sitting idly by. You can add to it anything you want. Anyway, the story so goes that while they were out, he took an axe and he chopped up all the little idols and he put the axe into the hand of the big idol. And when they came home, they asked him, "Hey, Avram, Gotten Himmel, Evishta, what happened to all of our idols?" So Avram says, "Well, take a look, don't you see? The big one is the one that chopped up all the little ones." So I'll tell you, even when I was a little child, I had a problem with this. I had problems in my story, but then I was also precocious. And I wondered, I mean, would Avraham Avinu really go ahead and cause such damage to his parents and chop up all of the idols? You know, it's nice that he wasn't even as honest as George Washington. George Washington was able to say, "I cannot tell a lie, I chopped down the cherry tree." Here he's not even ready to admit that he's the one who chopped up all of the idols into little idols. So of course the Rambam understands that Medrash in a completely different way. It's a beautiful Medrash, but what the Medrash is really saying is that Avraham Avinu intellectually shattered the idols of the world. Intellectually, by dint of his genius, his unbelievable intelligence. That's how he did it. That's how he shattered the idols of the world. Torah does not tell us this whole story because this story, the story of Avraham Avinu's first 70 years, is not something for us to emulate. Do you know where we are supposed to begin following in the footsteps of Avraham Avinu from the moment that God tells him, "Lech lecha me'artzecha me'maladetcha mi'beit avicha el ha'aretz asher ara'echa," at which time Avraham Avinu listens, obeys the word of God. And that's what we have to learn. From him we learn obedience. That's what we're supposed to learn. Avraham, the great genius, receives the command, and Avraham goes. There's another problem with Avraham Avinu. This is another one that for years it bothered me, and I didn't have the guts to ask the question. But I'm going to ask it. I'm not afraid anymore. Not afraid. The beginning of Parshas Vayera, God appears to Avraham, and he's sitting in Eloni Mamre. He's sitting at the opening of the tent on a very hot day, unusually hot day. Very hot day. One wants to have a little taste of Gehenna. That's the day, because God didn't want Avraham, who's third day after his circumcision, he's 99 years old, God doesn't want that he should be troubled by guests. So therefore he makes it very, very hot out there. And who would be out? The only ones who would be out on a day like that are tourists or angels. And Avraham Avinu was sitting at the opening to the tent, and he wants a guest. And he lifts his eyes and he sees, yeah, then he's 99 years old. It's the third day after a bris milah. It's extremely hot outside. He goes running after them and brings these dusty characters into his house, and he suspects that idolaters have to wash their feet. He wants them to be clean so that they should remove the idolatry from themselves. We're talking about three nothings. By the way, they have to be three Mishugoyim to be out on such a hot day. And we know the whole story. And he saw, he ran toward them, and he said to God, "Please, wait a minute. I found favor in your eyes. Don't leave me. Let some water be brought. Wash your feet. Rest under the tree. I'm going to take bread and bread." He tells them bread. He makes a suda shloma hamelech bishato. All of the running, all of the schlepping. And I don't understand. I have rachmanis. It's a very hot day. You're 99 years old. You're third day after the milah. And what happens if you'd asked either your doctor or your local Orthodox rabbi, you know what he would tell you? Avraham Avinu lit angelites. Where are you running? Do you know what this is? We were always taught Avraham Avinu, the pillar of chesed, his kindness. You know? When chesed is so painful, as it must have been for Avraham Avinu, we're on the outer edge of absolute absurdity. What's he doing? This is something to be emulated. Is this what God really wants of us? Is Avraham supposed to be an example? Let's call a spade, it's absolute madness. Madness. And this is a great accomplishment. You know, there are all sorts of mishugoyim in the world. Avraham Avinu over here seems to be an absolute ridiculous and absurd doer of chesed. I know it's been difficult. It's difficult to ask a question like that. We've been raised all our lives to have great respect for Avraham's chesed. And then, I don't know how they create them, but in Parshat Chayesara, they go, Eliezer goes looking for a wife for Yitzchak, and you know what he finds? A Balat Chesed, as mad as Avraham Avinu. Here are 10 gesunte shtick camel drivers who are standing twiddling their thumbs watching this little girl running back and forth and filling up water for them. Krank biste to go give your own camels to drink. What? It's crazy. So I'll tell you, Avraham Avinu is not crazy. Avraham Avinu is not simply a genius. He's a genius's genius. Avraham makes a number of discoveries. His great discovery, number one, is that he discovers God. He obeys God and goes to Eretz Yisrael, El Ha'aretz Asher Ar'eko, to the land where I will show you. I once said, Shatan that Asher Ar'eko, I'm going to show you what you can be. And Avraham Avinu takes a close look at himself and he becomes terrified. There's a great fear that overwhelms Avraham Avinu. And it's something to be terribly frightened of. I call it the dark side of genius. You think it's easy to be a genius? There are certain things that come very naturally to geniuses. My wife always says she's so happy I'm not a genius. I said, I'm close, not too far, but, no. And Avraham Avinu would have all the right in the world to feel that he is a superior human being. He's God's gift to mankind. All of the lowly, mere mortals walking the face of the earth, what do they know? They are nothing to me. You know what they are? They're the dust of the earth. The genius sees himself as being a law unto himself. What applies to the rest of the world doesn't apply to the genius. He can do whatever he wants. It's the common folk out there. You people. You're the ones that have to obey certain carefully honed laws. But those laws are made for mere mortals. Laws are not made for great geniuses. Let me explain to you. The best way to explain it. A book that I read and reread. Unbelievable book. I already started Tivon Shehischin and Paul Johnson. There's a book by Paul Johnson called The Intellectuals. An unbelievable document. To die, you ever have a chance, get your hands on this book. He describes about 15 geniuses. Begins with Rousseau, Shelley, Marx, Ibsen, Tolstoy, Ernest Hemingway, Bertrand Russell, Sartre, Schreckest. I'm just going to take one. Just one. Most probably all of the theories of social justice and education are all based on the works of Jean-Jacques Rousseau. Rousseau was a Goyen adir. So many of the great people who followed him said unashamedly and unabashedly that everything that they know is all the result of the great works of Jean-Jacques Rousseau. He stands in a class by himself, absolutely towering over the rest of his generation, and for that matter, generations to come. He was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant. Now what we're going to do is spend a few minutes talking about the real Jean-Jacques Rousseau. He was a genius. He was a Meshuggah. He was a Meshuggah. He was not merely a genius. He was cruel. He was vile. He was evil. He was a liar. He was a cheat. And people worshipped him. Even those who knew all of that about him. He writes once, he wallowed in his misfortune. He writes, "What could your miseries have in common with mine? My situation is unique, unheard of since the beginning of time." He also writes, "The person who can love me as I can love is still to be born." No one ever had more talent for loving. I was born to be the best friend that ever existed. I would leave this life with apprehension if I knew a better man than me. Show me a better man than me, a heart more loving, more tender, more sensitive. Posterity will honor me. His wife gave birth to 5 children. He refused to bring any of them home. After birth, they were all given to orphanages. Never cared at all about his 5 children. Does he should have? And the theories of education are built on his thought. And he studied children. He wouldn't tolerate them. This is the man, of course, who has loved. And there's never been anybody who's had the capacity of love that he has. It's unbelievable. He had all sorts of other mishigasim, and Johnson writes, this sickness cohabited with a great and original genius of mind, and the combination was very dangerous, both for Rousseau and for others. There is something very dangerous about genius. As I said, I call it the dark side of genius. He had no feelings for anybody. He showed no affection or indeed interest in other members of his family. His father meant nothing to him, and his death was merely an opportunity to inherit. He had nothing to do with any of the members of his family. He wanted nothing to do with them. Since a large part of Rousseau's reputation rests on his theories about the upbringing of children, more education is the main underlying theme of his discourse, Emily, the Social Contract. It is curious that in real life, as opposed to writing, he took so little interest in children. I told you what he did with his 5 children. And then here, one modern academic lists Rousseau's shortcomings as follows. He was a masochist, exhibitionist, neurasthenic, and you don't have to know what it means. Just listen to all the other words, and you'll know what a Meshuggah was. Hypochondriac, onanist, latent homosexual, afflicted by the typical urge for repeated displacements, incapable of normal or parental affection, incipient paranoiac, narcissistic introvert,
rendered unsocial by his illness, a pathologically timid, kleptomaniac, infantilist, irritable, and miserly. It is all very baffling, Rob Johnson writes, and suggests that intellectuals are as unreasonable, illogical, and superstitious as anyone else. He was an interesting madman. Avraham Avinu knew there's great danger in genius. And the great danger in genius is that a man will see himself as a law unto himself, have absolutely no use for those seeming human beings that swarm on the face of this earth. I'll give you an example closer to home. When the government about five weeks ago, the government decided that their Arafat Yimach Shemei is persona non grata. Next day in the paper you see Uri Avneri has run to Ramallah to be a human shield. He is going to protect Arafat with his body. In 1988, when Uri Avneri's mother died, in her will it said, "Not a penny to my son Uri, who never cared about me at all." She was in a nursing home for years. He never came to visit her. It was in a substandard nursing home, and the members of the family asked him to chip in order to find a better place for her. He refused. In his whole life, he never responded to an invitation to a family simcha. He came once to the Seder in all of his years, only to make fun of it, mock, and stalk out of the Seder. Uri Avneri, the great lover of peace and all of mankind, who's the human shield for Arafat, also made an agreement with his wife, conditional, never to have children. He doesn't want children. He loved cats. By the way, Marx loved cats. Tolstoy was sugar over cats. But Uri Avneri has been known that if a cat would get him upset, he would simply pick the cat up and throw it out the window. This is the man who presents himself to us and to the rest of the world as the great lover of peace, the lover of every hilarious Palestinian killer that there is. Beautiful white beard, 80 years old. I don't know why they didn't make a party for him. That's the in thing, you understand.
Because Arafat wasn't allowed to come, that's why.
So here we're talking about a person who presents a certain face to the world and is a mishugana. He hates human beings. He has absolutely no use for them. They interviewed people who worked for him for 24 years when he he was the editor of Olam HaZeh. They said that he was a brilliant man. Everyone of them said he was brilliant. But he had absolutely no feelings, completely void, dead, nothing, absolutely nothing.
Avraham Avinu discovered that genius can be tragic.
And you know what Avraham Avinu is going to do? Avraham Avinu accomplishes the impossible.
He's going to turn himself into a lover of every human being, to a fault, to the point where Avraham Avinu can stand before God and say to God, "Anochi afar va'efer, I nothing." That's genius. That's the great brilliance of Avraham Avinu. He knew what was necessary. He knew that genius has to be tempered. It has to be guarded. It has to be watched. It has to be nurtured. And genius has a sign that says, "Beware. Beware." And Avraham Avinu is going to become the pillar of chesed, because he is the
greatest example of chesed. And for him, what I'm saying is the following. It was not something that came natural to Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu made himself into a Baal Chesed of the highest order. Most probably his natural instinct would be, all these stupid people who for hundreds of years have worshipped idols, they're useless, they're valueless, they're nothing. Avraham Avinu's greatest genius was turning himself into the Amud HaChesed. Because he knew, oh, did he know how frightening can be the results of genius? So, you know already from past years that one of my weaknesses, and most probably it's one of my problems, but it helps me every so often. I read the Haaretz. It's always good for the mind. So here it is. This week I had already finished the shiur, prepared the shiur. So Shammai Leibowitz has an article this week about Avram standing up against God. All right. Shammai Leibowitz, by the way, is a grandson of Yeshayahu Leibowitz. He's also one of the people, I believe, who is a lawyer for Marwan Bargutin, right? A human shield for Marwan Bargutin. Oichet Aguin Ada, you understand? So Shammai Leibowitz, you know, I love these guys are so selective. He says, you have to have the background. You know, you can forget one week, you can forget what happened last week. So first we have to remember that there were the 27 pilots. The 27 pilots who, most of them out to pasture already, who are not going to fly against targets in Yehuda v'Shomron. They're not going to kill innocent civilians. What you may not know is there are about 36 of the great intellectuals, the writers and the poets and the playwrights that have also come out on behalf of the Tayasim. Refused to serve. And you have no idea. Oh, the Haaretz, every article is praising them. It's their democratic right. This is morality. This is the way to speak out. Of course, what it means is the following. They're not going to take the risk of maybe killing an innocent civilian, which therefore, of course, means that there are going to be more innocent men, women, and children, Jews, who are going to be killed. But Arab children are obviously worth more than Jewish children. I have a personal interest in all of this, because I know the kind of abuse that was hurled at a group of 9 rabbis, and I was one of them, who called upon soldiers to refuse to remove Jews from their homes. The whole world came down on us. And now, they're courageous. They're speaking out at a great moment in Jewish history. This is morality. This is ethics. Long live the pilots. So the Haaretz had also an interview with a number of the it's unbelievable. I mean, I'm going to say it, and you're not going to believe me, and you're going to think I'm crazy. But I'm not genius enough to be crazy. So, Samach Yizhar, who's one of the great writers in this country, said, no targeted killings. You know what we should do? Do like we did with Eichmann. Pick them up and bring them here for trial. So, of course, Shammai Leibowitz will be able to be their lawyer. A Meshuggah. A Meshuggah. We find Eichmann 15 years after the war, so you bring him for trial. During the war, you kill him. He doesn't see the difference. And he says it 3 times in the interview, bring them back here for trial. Oh, just send a
Apaches in to pick up guys to try and tell you it'll be a field day for the lawyers from the left in this country. Unbelievable. What does Shammai Leibowitz say about Avraham? You know, Avraham, he stands up there and he says, HaShofet kol ha'aretz lo yaseh mishpat, the judge of the whole earth will not do justice. You know what he's giving God a piece of his mind. What he conveniently forgets is that when Avraham Avinu finds out that Lot has been captured, he goes out instantly to battle against four great kingdoms. And I'm sure that Avraham Avinu killed many innocent bystanders in the course of that battle. He's even worried about it, that God has to tell him, Schorcha, Onochi Mogen Lecha, I will protect you. Schorcha Harbin Yoda, Rashi says, because he was concerned that there may have been an innocent civilians I killed in the course of battle. What can you do? And then he says, you know, you have to love the gear. He brings all of those psukkim. Lotamar al dam re'echor? No. Habola hardecho hashkein v'hardo? No. They're so? No. It's unbelievable. What he does before Avraham Avinu. But he does it poor Avraham. Avraham Avinu is now the Tayas of Eretz Yisrael. He's the left. But it's more. The dark side of genius is something that we are suffering from. We're suffering from. I don't know how we do it. I don't know how you can take it. Me, I don't know. I know it's very upsetting. A bunch of losers. Mitzni, you understand, couldn't even run his party for 6 months, but he's going to make peace between Israel and the Palestinians. Balin, who was the architect of the most tragic mistake in Jewish history, you understand, who should have been put out to pasture. You know what I imagine? First of all, I'll tell you. I could have pulled a better deal. What do you mean you pull a deal? Of course, you give them whatever you want. Whatever they want. You pull a deal. I give them half the Tel Aviv. I say I have peace in Israel. You understand? Beautiful article today in Harvard by Zeransky. And it says these people don't begin to understand the significance of the Yerushalayim and Harabah. There would be no Eretz Yisrael, no Zionist movement without Har HaBayit. And these people are just going to bother the way. I had to ask some of the members of my family, you know what it reminded me of. Remember playing Monopoly? I'm done. I'll give you Boardwalk. You'll give me Ventnor Place. Now the truth is, these guys should first go and go straight to jail. I have a bigger problem. My bigger problem is the genius Balin came up with the great plan that Harabayit, the sovereignty of Harabayit, is going to be divine sovereignty. Elohim owns Harabayit. I, the man, already has said on a number of occasions publicly he doesn't believe in God. So I don't know who he's going to give me. He may have to create a God just to be able to give him the Harabayit. We're dealing with sick people. These are people who believe that they are a law unto themselves and they can make decisions on behalf of each and every one of us without asking us, without being authorized. It would not happen in any other country on the face of this earth. An American who would have gone to negotiate with Vietnam or probably would have been shot at door. And this is a banana republic where these people can continue to do this time and time again. They are the destruction of Christ. This is the dark side of genius. Mitzvah is not such a genius. So here we have, now we're faced with a whole new issue. You know, we've been charmed, I say. We've been nickeled. We've been penitent. We've been quenching. And now we're being denied. Harder, you're right, okay, you're right, you're playing with all the geniuses over here. Can you remember, to be able to remember all of the different agreements that were made and signed and were never kept, and they're studying the same thing all over again. I decided a few years ago, and I believe it to be absolutely true.
the real leadership of Christ Himself today resides within Christ. The common folk are a highly uncommon kind of folk. And one of you, listen to me, I'll tell you what I find of him and say. He'd say, beware of the geniuses. Beware of the geniuses. Don't for a moment be fooled. Don't for a moment think that there are people out there who have a greater sense of humanity and compassion and wisdom than anyone here in this room has. Don't believe it for a minute. These are people who trample us and trample upon all of our values and endanger Christ's love. Grave danger. They should be drummed out of Christ's love. Okay. In Kippur in the afternoon, I had a bird in my shoe. Good. Well, okay. Doesn't happen all the time. For that matter, it was the first time I had. They gave me the honor of naming the baby, so I made a bird, we had got them, and did it with it, of course, the baby did. I should have made a shakiyano on that bird, we had got them, that I made on Yom Kippur the first time I had. Now, of course, it was a Chabad family, and so, of course, they gave the baby a very original name, Menachem Mendel. Yeah, Menachem Mendel. There are about 5-6 Menachem Mendels in the larger family already. They were all confused. Mendy 1, Mendy 2, Mendy 3. All right, it's reason 1, it's reason 2. And here's the Zeta. Zeta's a smart guy, you know. And, you know, he looks like a tough fellow. He comes over to me after the bris and says, Rabbi, I tell you something. Rabbi, I gotta tell you. Everything different is coming from the program. And you know, he wants to get home because, you know, I said this to me, he got me in at the program, he's coming home. So when you come out after 5 CM, there's a light, and he sees up ahead that the police are stopping cars there for the car. And he thinks, he says, I hope they don't stop me. I've got to get home. Anyway, they were doing some help. They stop the car. 2-3 police get around the car, and they come into the room, and he puts their head into the car, and he says, we have a lot of fresh rolls. Do you know what family or receiver that he uses before Yom Kippur? So the guy's getting started crying. And people are hunting back there, and the police are saying, ah! They don't care about the hunting. They go to one of their shops and the team has dead, and dead, not money up. And he probably took it to the shooter in Hermos, to the shooter, had it to see them up there. Yeah, these are the kind of stories we used to love in the old days, when we were only had a few. But here is this grown man, he's been in a long time, and he's crying in Kippur in the afternoon in Jerusalem. So I look at him and I say, Mika, I'm going to say, who's like your people in Israel? He said, no, Rabbi, no. Any Ka'am HaYisrael, there is no people like the people of Israel. You know what Avraham Avinu was saying? Avraham Avinu was telling us, we are strong, we are brave, we are creative, we are resilient people. We are living here under such impossible conditions, no other people have been under such conditions any place else in the world. The fact is, if I go into a restaurant, I was real racist in that's a vegetarian restaurant on Yaddo. Village Green, very good, Village Green. And you should, I'm sitting there and I'm watching the door. I'm looking at the door, See who's coming. This is the way we're living over here. This is the way we're living. A day goes by without a people, and you sit at home. Avraham Avinu would say, Ein Ka'am HaYisrael, you're strong, you're brave, you're courageous.
You are the backbone of Christ's throne, not the Galens, and not the Mitchmans, and not the Birds, and not the Amazings, not all of the gracious cats that have only brought us into such a terrible situation that we will never get out of it without the help of the Dominican. There's no way in the natural order of things that we're ever going to get out of it. And I'm going to believe in the whole of exactly that. He's going to tell you, I know the pitfalls and the blame that it feels. I know the terrible tragedies of geniuses who think that they can resolve all of the world's problems, what terrible tragedy they can bring about. I know what people who think that they have the answers and the solutions to all of the most intractable problems in the world. I know what kind of suffering they can bring upon them. I've seen it, I know what it's all about. And you know what you have to have? You have to have faith in unpaid growth. Because you're defying the people. The very fact that we stay here. And the people are going to have it. Did we have any complaints when we say, listen, thank you, we have it already. Mm-hmm. How long? At what time? How many more days do we have to go through? How many more sinners do we have to go through? And we stay. And we stay. As long as we stay any time for this world. And then I hope Shana is out there. You know, we have to tell them to tell them to stay. We're here. And that's the biggest source that we have. There's nothing related to that. We're here, and we're here to stay, and we're staying here, and nothing is going to dislodge us, and we know exactly what it is that we want to come with her. We can continue to grow and develop our families here and build homes all over Africa. Absolutely. And I don't know what to say, but that's exactly it. We've got to do a little bit more for my Chevron. I have a few hundred people around here. I'd like to have a lot more people in Chevron. I might like to have a lot more people to be on full of Yesha. But that's what it takes for us. And we have to know those who are out there. We have to know how to judge them. Never make the mistake of thinking that they're more moral, or they're more ethical, or they're more intelligent, or they're more brilliant. They are all Rousseaus of one shade or another. And that's our terrible tragedy. We have a lot of Rousseaus floating around. If you ever walk in Tel Aviv someplace and a cat comes flying at you, you'll know where it came from. Mark's in the paper.